Peru contact in 1967. Sunday, the 15th of May 1960, that morning dawned with a cloudy sky after some days of radiant sun. I thought if it rained it would be difficult to walk the mountains, and faced with this quite possible inconvenience, I was at the point of postponing the walk for that day. While I was lamenting the unfavorable state of the weather, Quisp knocked on my door. I opened it to find him so enthusiastic for the excursion that I changed my mind, and in a few moments I got ready and we started out. We crossed the Kitarisque River and began to climb the heights that began at the right bank there. During the climb I remembered scenes of the encounters that I had experienced with those strangers in the days before. For moments, in my mind, the thoughts of them began to involve me in their activities, which disturbed my tranquility, and for that I was happy for having changed the direction of my steps for this day, and thus to avoid any new encounter. But what disturbed me most was to know who those men really were that could be found in the abrupt and also unpopulated skirts of the Peruvian Andes, in the Ancash region. While trying to find an explanation for this most incomprehensible unknown, I noticed that my companion walked over the rocks with ease and rapidity. I began to feel that with him I could explore in one day, much more of the mountains than I had previously done with Perez, and this pleased me. I could see that Quisp possessed practice and agility to climb mountains, for which I decided to ask him about his experiences. As we had been walking for some hours, I suggested that we take a brief rest, with the intention of talking more easily that morning. Shall we rest a few minutes? What do you think? I asked while making an effort to overcome fatigue. I think it is very early. We have just begun to climb, but if you want to stop for a moment, yes, responded Quisp, showing surprise at my suggestion. We will go to that big rock there above, where I believe is a good place to see the surroundings. What do you think?
That is good, sir, he responded, matching his pace to mine. When we got near the big rock, he went up first and stood observing the surroundings intently, as if he sought something lost among the peaks, and I went up also and sat down.
What are you looking for with such intensity? Are you perhaps trying to discover something? I said with an expression of amusement. Quisp smiled and said nothing for some moments. It looked like he was trying with some effort to confirm something very important, and then he spoke.
The truth, sir, is that I am afraid and somewhat embarrassed to tell you what I am looking for. In these regions, at times happen, on rare occasion, things happen that when told later, they say that you are loco, that it was dreamed when you were sleeping from tiredness, or that you are pulling a joke.
What are you talking about, Quisp?
I asked. And then to give him confidence I added,
tell me once. You have my assurance that I will not consider you loco. If I had not been confident of you I would not have accepted you to accompany me on this trip. I said persuasively. Is it true that you will not tease me if I tell you a secret?
Oh no, my friend, I never tease anybody. In my concept all persons have the right to think, to opinion, to question and suggest about anything that makes up the life that surrounds us, and of which we also are a part.
Do you speak seriously, sir?
Yes. I do, my friend. For me the opinions, events and problems related to life, are nothing to joke about.
Thank you, sir. He responded with a tone of voice that expressed relief. As he sat down beside me looking at me, he said, around these places are constantly coming some rare people who say they come from a distant world.
Yes. I already know, Quisp. They say that they are inhabitants of a planet they call Apu, and they travel space in some ships that have the form of deep plates, airplanes, logs, pears, cigars and other different shapes.
But sir, how do you know all this? Who told you?
Nobody has told me, Quisp. I have seen them.
Is that true, sir?
He exclaimed and stood up, surprised and glad. And so it is, my friend. If you want to be sincere with me, my friend, sit down and tell me all that you know about those visitors. As I said this, In my mind emerged another confirmation that the strangers used cunning in passing themselves off for extraterrestrials, to engage the campesinos, taking their ignorance and using it for their objectives. Thank you, sir, thank you very much, and know that I will tell you the pure truth. He emphasized this, and he began to refer case by case to his encounters, trying not to omit any of the least details. While Quisp narrated his experiences, I looked toward the mountain peaks of the Cordillera Blanca, White Range, which rose one after another, forming a majestic white collar of nature that adorns the South American continent. Soon I saw a condor that crossed the space near a peak, moving with speed toward the mountain escarpments of the left bank of the Kitarisqua River. For the first time in my life, I observed that the gigantic bird, whose wingspan exceeded 2 meters, was fleeing desperately from a little bird leaving a feather. A giant fleeing from such a little bird, I thought. It seemed ridiculous to me and I released a loud outburst of laughter. Are you making fun of me, sir? Quisp said in surprise, interrupting his narration. No, my friend, please, I am not making fun of you. I simply saw a condor fleeing from a little bird, and it seemed so ridiculous, for which I laughed. Of course, sir. The sparrow is very small and for that the condor cannot catch it. At times these giants create problems for which the little ones feel too abused. But when those rebel the others change and even commit grave errors, recounted my smiling companion. I understood the expression of Quisp, which despite his ingenuity, barely touched upon the most negative problem of human society. Will the day come when men replace the word discrimination with fraternity? I thought, and confiding the soon realization of this yearning of humanity, I stood up. To walk, my friend? Said Quisp. As you say, sir, we are much behind. What does your watch say? It is 10:05, he said. At 12 we should be on top if we continue walking, but if we stop to rest every 100 meters, we will not get to the top in all day. Affirmed Quisp, referring to the time we had lost. I will be okay from here on, and we will not have to rest until you order it. Besides that, I make you chief of the expedition, I said. He smiled and accelerated his pace. We had climbed to the top of a sharp peak located in front of the Champara snowfield. We found ourselves thus at more than 4,000 meters, 12,000 feet, altitude above sea level, and a cold wind chilled us. We stopped a minute to select a route and then took it and began to advance to a small rise located in front of us, and there to build a fire to warm our hands. We were almost there when we encountered a pair of goats. They have become separated from their flock, Quisp said to me while I observed that one of them had a single toe and limped on one front foot. Thus, I believe. I hope we find the owner, so that he can recommend some interesting places for us to visit. Surely we will find him, sir, for around here live many shepherds. From that main hill there is an extensive rocky meadow, but with an abundance of grass for the animals. When we get above there you will see, assured Quisp. We advanced animatedly. Minutes later we found ourselves at the top of the rise. In front of us appeared, effectively, a meadow partly furrowed by profound gullies formed by some remote wash of water. In contrast with the forests and shrubbery that grew around this feature stood out. We hurried to climb over an elevated pinnacle to give us a view of the surroundings of the place. Soon, at a little distance from us we saw a regular extension where cows were pastured, cows, sheep, goats and some horses, which covered most of the area. At the end of the meadow was a cabin constructed of unfinished logs. For its roof it had grass straw, and from the home came white smoke that dispersed in space by the wind. In front of the hut burned a bonfire. And around it I saw various people seated on the ground. You told the truth, Quisp, for there are shepherds there waiting to invite us to lunch, I said joking. They are always there. We will advise them of their lost goats, he said. Won't they be bothered by our visit? I don't think so. Some of those who live there above would be bothered if a stranger approached their huts, but those are good people. They will not be bothered. I am sure of it. Then let's us go where they are. I said, and we went. Soon we arrived at the hut. Two dogs came out to meet us. One of the shepherds got up, calmed the dogs and came up to us. I greeted him, and he extended his hand without speaking. This one does not understand Spanish. Speaks only Quechua, no more, Quisp hurriedly communicated to me. Tell him we are hunting pumas, and for that we have come to ask so that they may orient us, as we have heard said that in this region they are killing cattle. The campesino understood some of my words and he showed some happiness. He spoke to Quisp in Quechua and extended his hand enthusiastically. The sudden change of manner of the campesino made me understand that the pumas had caused damage, and that our offer was accepted. This was a positive way to achieve communication. The campesino invited us to come closer to the fire and sit down with them. There were three women, several men and two children who hid behind their mothers, like they were afraid of us. This made me uncomfortable and I pondered how to solve this inconvenience. Then I remembered that I had some caramels in my pocket, and I withdrew to and offered them to the little ones. The man who received us spoke to the children, but they did not respond. One of the women took the caramels and offered them to the little ones. She thanked me. Suddenly she furrowed her brow and looked sad, and a tear rose on her face down by the cold of the Andes. This worried me and I urged Quisp to ask about the reason for the sadness. One of the men, understanding my worry, came over to my side and in a lowered voice, said, "Sir, thank you for the pain that you feel. She is crying because she has a sick child. Some 9 days ago this boy went to the mountain, climbed a rock, lost his balance and fell, breaking his right arm and some ribs." The man spoke in very poorly pronounced Spanish, but I understood and he asked if he could take me to see the boy. I accepted, and without consulting the woman he invited me into the cabin. We entered, the campesino, Quisp and I. The scene, unfortunately, horrified me. On the floor, on a pallet of hay, covered with a wool blanket made by hand, lay the child. His swollen face had taken on a bluish color by the infections, his eyes half closed, his mouth half open, and with his tongue and lips swollen, looked terrible. The campesino pulled me to the boy's side and I touched the part of his wrist to feel the pulse. I became still more alarmed. Not knowing whether for my desperation, little experience, or for some other phenomenon unknown to me, I felt no heartbeat in the arteries. I deduced from this that the little one had entered a state of coma. Despite the hospital in Hualinca being many kilometers from that place, I decided to try to take the child, as soon as possible, to the doctors for treatment. I mentioned this to Quisp, and asked him to explain to the mother our offer. Meanwhile, as I planned how to undertake the transfer of the patient to the hospital, the campesino advised the mother of the little one about my determination. This then infuriated her. She came into the house desperately determined and shouted at Quisp, threatening him with her finger, and grabbed me by my arm and pulled me outside with inexplicable force. She fell to the ground. I stood there stunned, and thought that my intention had offended some custom of those people. I felt fear, perhaps she would attack me. I reflected, and called to Quisp that we should leave that place. With this the mother of the boy came out of the house again, came to my side and began to shout and gesticulate, and putting her hands on my face. The only words that I can remember, without knowing their significance were, "Mamon. Tta. Mamon. Tta Dios." Quisp came over to me and said, "Do not fear, sir, the mother of the child says that the gods from the sky will come and cure her son, and that we should leave him alone." This calmed my nerves a little and I believed that she meant that some witch would come and cure her boy, utilizing fire and smoke and incantations, etc. "Shall we wait and meet the gods?" Quisp asked, and waited for my decision. "Yes, sir, please, you are going to see something very interesting, I assure you, and what you see you will like," he suggested with enthusiasm. "Very well, Quisp, we will wait for the presence of the gods, I said with an expression of lightly joking. A dog came up to me with his ears down and wagging his tail in a signal of friendship. I petted it, and it licked my hand. We became friends. Following the dog, a little boy came and sat by my side. He spoke with emotion in Quechua, which I did not understand, but it seemed to me that he was saying something about his dog. I tried to initiate a conversation with the little one. Despite our not knowing each other, the purity of the little child originated a sincere desire for friendship. This is the only time in the life of us humans in which we react with uncorrupted sentiments. I thought at that instant. I caressed the child and the dog, and called to Quisp to help me with interpretation. Very soon we were approached by another child and we began to talk about the rain, the wind, the trees, sky and moon. Meanwhile, several minutes had passed without my awareness. The sky clouded over and the overcast became big dark storm clouds. Despite my not understanding the language of the children, nor them mine, the conversation developed in perfect harmony. They spoke of the fields, the birds, animals and flowers, and I explained to them for what purpose served the carbine, how to handle it and its construction. One of them looked at me seriously and said, "My friend, why do they kill animals? Is it by the order of the owner?" While I concentrated on forming an adequate response that could explain to the child the reason for taking the life of a being to eat its flesh, the dogs barked and ran to the other end of the pampa where the cattle were pastured. Quisp grabbed me by the shoulder brusquely. "Look there, sir," he shouted in desperation, and I turned my head in the direction indicated and saw that an apparatus similar to a small airplane was descending vertically from the clouds. It landed among the goats and sheep without making any sound. It was of a color different from the flying discs I had seen before. I thought of some military maneuvers and waited the disembarkation of some soldiers to talk to them. Soon, from the interior of the ship came one of those strangers. He was dressed the bodysuit with which I was familiar, but its cut was different from what I had seen before. This one had shoulders like our own, with a pronounced hip, and was of smaller stature. It came toward us without stepping on the grass, moving in the air some centimeters above the ground. "Why do you walk in that manner?" asked Quisp, confused. "It is said so as not to damage the cells of the meadow grass by stepping on them," responded the being in a serious tone and smiling. The dogs ran to the stranger and it petted them. The cattle remained contented, as if they were already familiar with the stranger. While the stranger came toward us, I noticed that Quisp and all the campesinos were kneeling with their palms together in front of their faces, which were inclined toward the ground. It seemed like a religious ceremony. That surprised me, but also clarified the unknown statement about the arrival of the gods which the mother of the boy had told me 1 hour earlier. Soon I noticed that the visitor was of the white race, and this confirmed my suspicions that they must be spies. Upon observing with more attention, I came to understand that the visitor was a woman, because I could see the rise of her breasts. She made a signal for the campesinos to get up, and they obeyed without delay. The visitor went toward the house without speaking to anybody, entered, and then came out carrying the child in her arms. She took him to the ship without delay. All present remained there in silence, but on the faces of those shepherds I noted an expression of joy. "What is happening?" I asked Quisp in a low voice, and interrupting the silence of the moment. He did not answer. This augmented still more my uneasiness, and I momentarily thought that my companion had united with the Kazampesians to cause me some harm. Fortunately, I carried my carbine, and I released the safety and remained alert. The minutes passed in the silence that dominated the place. Only the dogs moved around me, and a sheep baaed suddenly. These were the only manifestations that broke the silence and tension. For a moment I thought that those strangers had in their ship, surgical rooms and other necessary resources to treat the sick and injured, and that they brought them to attract the innocent campesinos, presenting themselves as gods. While I waited for the unknown to return the boy bandaged and unconscious, Before my very eyes appeared a scene unbelievable, illogical and singular. Suddenly I saw that the boy descended alone from the ladder of the ship, and upon touching the ground ran towards us, reaching down to pick up a stone, and thus showing his perfect state of health. For having seen him when he was swollen, I did not recognize him now and thought that he must be another boy, a member of the crew, perhaps. Then I waited for the reaction of the mother of the child. The little boy had not covered half the distance from the ship to us, when his mother ran towards him shouting in emotion. All present embraced and gave shouts of joy. Quisp, with the dogs also, ran toward the mother of the boy with jumps of joy. When all returned to calmness, I asked the mother to let me examine the boy. Quisp acted as interpreter and the woman accepted. I approached the little one, now with his face smiling and of natural color, with the swelling gone and looking perfectly healthy. I touched his arm, before badly fractured, and began to examine him rib by rib. Despite those cases having altered my tranquility, I tried to look as serene as possible, to observe what I was examining. Who knows how they affected this cure, but I could find no evidence of surgery on his arm. The boy showed no abnormality in his body as shown by his smile, his agility and the urgency of his mother to give him something to eat. While I was examining the resuscitated patient, which surprised me about what had just happened, the strange nurse, with a companion, was among us. They smiled and with a look expressing respect and friendship, tried to explain to the campesinos that those benefits achieved must be memorized in order to imitate them when necessary. And for this they asked no thanks, no payments, no praise or flattery. They spoke in what seemed to me to be Quechua, because once in a while they laughed with the campesinos until they teared, but soon I also heard the conversation in my own mother language, as if some device was translating the words, simultaneously, into the various languages. I spoke to Quisp about this. Do you understand what they are saying? I asked. Yes, I clearly understand. He responded. In what language are they speaking? I don't hear them well. I asked Quisp again, to assure myself that they were truly speaking what I perceived. They speak in their own language and also in all the others at the same time. He responded with a gesture of affirmation. How is that, Quisp? I asked, explain to me. Do they have some device that translates simultaneously, their idiom to others? I don't know, Senor. I only know that one time they told us that some positive ions that make all beings live treated of this understanding of their words simultaneously. With this, the strange nurse came over to me. My name is Ivanka, my friend, and what is yours? She spoke in a soft voice in my own dialect. I gave her my name curtly. She smiled. The name of the stranger reminded me that she could be from some European place, in whose services she was engaged, and I began to take interest in discovering her origin. Your name sounds of Slavic origin, and sounds beautiful. From what country are you? I asked in a courteous tone. I don't belong to any country. My paternity is universal. I am a citizen of all countries and sister of all beings that exist. I like what you are saying, but I don't know if I truly believe this. But at least your words carry your knowledge. Nor do I understand what you are pretending. But what you have just done with the boy was a thankful act of compassionate mercy. My friend, I ask, please, why do you treat me like this? Why? She asked suddenly. Why? We customarily treat them in this manner if you cannot do it, proceeding according to need. I fully agree. I responded affirmatively, and then continued, tell me, Ivanka, how did you cure the boy with such perfection in such a short time, or perhaps you hypnotized him and all of us together? My friend, though I still have not satisfied your doubts about my identity, I will do it now. I told you that I am a citizen of all places in the universe, and sister of all the beings that exist in it. I am a citizen of Apu. It is the innate duty of all Apuianos to protect the cellular life and to help those beings in whatever place we find them. We do not know preferences, privileges, charges, favoritisms nor advantage. Our love, caring and knowledge, is for all beings equally, because we are a part of all that exists in the universe. I was astonished by such a philosophy as that stranger had just imparted to me. I was quiet for some moments, and in reaction I said to her, "But you still have not told me how you cured the boy." "Pardon," contested Ivanka, "we have various forms of curing. One of the most positive is the disintegration and reintegration."
"The disintegration and reintegration? What form is that?"
"We disintegrate the cells of the body of the patient into the smallest particles, and then reintegrate the body perfectly healthy, with renewed cells." She responded. "Is it possible that you can also create cells?"
"Yes, my friend. For some millions of years, since the Apuianos decomposed the atom into its smallest parts. With this work, we obtained the highest powers, approaching immortality, and the positive control of ions and many other things."
"What do you call the minimum part of an atom?" I asked in a light-handed way.
"We call it the minimus, according to a translation from the Apuniano language," responded Ivanka emphatically.
Listening to an explanation so simple as that then, would alter the serenity of anybody. But since I already knew the repetition of the strangers, I only thought that they were trying to convince me, thus validating my hypnosis theory so that I would believe them superpowers of the world.
"Listen, Ivanka," I said, "can you make some kind of a demonstration for me, that I may capture the instant of the disintegration and reintegration?"
"Yes, my friend, I shall do that with much pleasure. See those sheep and goats that are grazing there on the pampa."
"Wait a moment," I suggested, since my intention was to call to Quisp to witness this spectacle and see if we are both hypnotized at the same time. With that, Quisp came to where we were without my calling him. I explained of what this treated. He smiled upon noting my doubt, and suggested, "Calm down, senor, and pay to me please a little serious attention. They can do many things that are for us incredible. You are going to be surprised." He assured me. A dog barked, chasing the birds that together with the chickens, pecked for food in the grass. The birds flew over the grass to the flock of sheep, and all watched the disturbed dog that tried to catch them in mid-flight. Suddenly the sheep and goats disappeared, and in their place appeared bushes and diverse flowers. There was all the varieties that existed on our planet, the most part unknown to us. The campesinos knelt before us with bowed heads, as if they were in mass. Quisp approached me and in a lowered voice said, "Kneel, senor. Don't remain standing." And he got down on his knees. On the pampa at that moment, the dog was the only animal standing that moved, because he was chasing the birds. A tense silence reigned in that place while I tried to discover the how and why of that singular event.
"What do you see on the pampa, my friend?" asked Ivanka in a friendly tone.
"I see what you want me to see, a dog chasing birds, and many flowers that you just seeded for us, by hypnotizing us."
Quisp raised his head and looked at me obliquely in anger. At that moment I saw the companion of Ivanka now playing with the dog that had given pursuit of the birds. The stranger seemed indifferent to the scenes that were taking place in the field, as if those flowers had been planted many years before.
"Would you like us to return the flowers to goats and sheep again?" Ivanka asked me in the most natural voice.
"Change them into doves." I responded jokingly, as if to relieve me of their, for me, hypnotic creations to which we had been subjected. She stood up, looked at me smiling in immobility, and she extended her hands horizontally, with the fingers toward the flowers, and suddenly the pampa filled with doves, big and small. They flew all about some meters above the ground. The dogs barked and ran after them. They flew some meters away and landed again, pecking in the grass. That surprised me. I thought that the stranger could hypnotize and suggest to people that they were seeing different apparitions without actually changing their true forms, but to hypnotize and to suggest to the dogs, so that they saw the same doves in place of the sheep, and chased them over the pampas surprised me. I felt fear. Ivankan understood my change and extended her hands again, and the goats and sheep reappeared grazing as they had been minutes before. The dogs returned and lay down. Quisp, annoyed, got up and, coming to my side, in a lowered voice said, "Are you afraid, Senor? Here there is nothing to frighten me." I responded, trying to recapture my serenity. The campesinos got up and began to comment about the events. While I was recuperating my tranquility, a child said something to me in Chua. I did not understand. "Would you like to go back to the doves again?" Quisp translated, smiling. That alleviated my nervousness somewhat. The little one had been impressed by the enormous flock of doves, and continued asking for its return. "Tell the child to ask this of Senorita Ivanka. She is the only one who can make the doves return," I said to Quisp. With this a hawk flew from the woods. I don't know whether by order of the nurse or casually, came toward us and landed on the left shoulder of the boy. He caressed it and shouted with joy, calling to his mother to show her the loving bird that still remained on his shoulder. Ivanka came up to Quisp, took him by the arm and smiling said, "My friend, can you explain to us why you are kneeling? See, Senorita. You have just made a miracle," responded Quisp respectfully. "You are mistaken, my friend. What I have just done was a work that any of you could have done, if you would have prepared for this. Please, my friend, explain to the others that we never make miracles. All is acquired by our work, utilizing the atoms of your components." Quisp inclined his head and was about to speak to the campesinos, while the companion of Ivanka came up to us. "This is my trip companion. His name is Pedro. For many years we have been traveling together in space," said Ivanka. I extended my hand and he did the same, pronouncing the words, "I will not forget you." I did not understand the significance of the words and thought that I had not heard his pronunciation well. "Signifies thank you in the Apunian expression," Ivanka explained, understanding my confusion. The other smiled. In my mind he was still unknown and I remained silent. Ivanka, Pedro and the sheep and goats were converted to flowers, then to doves, and then back to sheep and goats again. Flying saucers, little airplanes, and such other strange manifestations and extravaganzas, recharged my mind with such confusion that I did not know if it wouldn't be better to flee, so as not to support that impression, or to remain waiting for the end of the spectacle. "If you desire, we can go to the ship. You will see many unknown to you things, or are you afraid?" said Ivanka, smiling. "I am not afraid," I responded after having concentrated all my courage to say it. I looked at Quisp and he approved with a movement of his head. His act neutralized my trepidation and I accepted the invitation of Ivanka. "Let us go," said Ivanka, and we went. This time she did not walk above the grass. She walked like us and that attracted my attention. I observed carefully and verified that the strangers took steps on the ground like Quisp and I, but the grass did not bend over under their feet. When we got to the ship, I saw that it floated in the air at some 70 centimeters above the ground. I understood that that strange form of parking was done so as not to damage the cells of the pasture, and I asked no questions. Also, I observed that the apparatus, by the form of its wings, was an airplane, though of a more rare model since its body was short but thick, like a passenger airplane. It has folding wings and exceeds the velocity of millions of kilometers per minute, said Ivanka, referring to the ship. I did not feel any need to converse about it, and thought that they might not understand whatever I might say about it anyway. The doors were located between the wings and the tail. They opened by being retracted into the walls when we got to within a meter of the ship. There inside, the appearance was similar to what I already knew from before, but this one I had never seen before. I thought that the ship would tip with our weight upon ascending, and I watched what would happen when Pedro went aboard. He stood on the only step that came out from the interior upon the door opening, and his weight did not provoke the least movement of the ship. We went aboard, Quisp, Ivanka with one of the dogs and I. Inside was an oval room with no right-angle corners, quite big and furnished with various chairs. On the walls one could see various viewing screens mounted like those of televisions, but of a pleasant color. "This is our friend, Aleph," said Ivanka, presenting me to another stranger that we met in the ship. I extended my hand and told him my name. He invited me to sit down, indicating one of the bigger seats nearby. At that moment I felt an agreeable and inexplicable sensation. Aleph looked at me. "You are degravitating, my friend. Your weight now is 80 grams," he said smiling. I looked at Quisp in curiosity, but he seemed to sitting as normally as if he were in a tavern. This made me believe that he had been in these ships before this and was already accustomed to the gravitiless state. Ivanka smiled and sat on a cushion by my side. "All of this seems very strange, no?" she asked. "Sincerely, yes," I answered. "Logically. Nothing else was expected. I also felt very strange when I for the first time came aboard an Epurian ship." "How is that, Ivanka? Is it that you are not from that planet, from Apu?" I asked uneasily, thinking that they were foreigners and sought to entertain me, joking at my ignorance. "My brother, calm yourself, please. You have a right to opine on us according to the cellular inspiration of your mind. But I assure you that we mean no harm to any being," said Ivanka supplicantly. I decided then to use maximum force to test the conditions. Ivanka continued, "For the past 47 years I have been a citizen of Apu. There the people are positive. There is no damage or egotism, no ambitions nor hate. Believe me, and if you take these things calmly, you yourself will become convinced that this is so." "Oh then, you were not born on Apu?" I said, laughing discourteously to think that this stranger intended to dominate me for advantage, and that possibly she wanted to make me believe that she was of my own countrymen. "No, my friend. I am an Earthpson," she answered ingenuously. "Where were you born then?" "In the city of Dubrovnik, in Yugoslavia, on the shores of the Adriatic Sea," she answered, smiling. I remembered that I had considered the proposition that she was no stranger, and I released an outburst of laughter. She smiled also. Suddenly I began to feel relieved. I don't know if it was for the feminine aspect or for some other unknown reason. "Then we are countrymen, no?" "Effectively, that is true. I spent my infancy on the banks of the Adriatic," she said as she looked at Pedro and Aleph, "and was examined on the skirts of the snowfields of Jampara, where I tried to fly individually during the next few minutes." "Did you say your child life was difficult?" "Why?" She stroked the dog that was sitting at her side. Out the window I could see a copse of grass by a small rock. Ivanka disintegrated the rock and the grass stood up. Then she gave me a look as if to observe my opinion on her work, and said, "How happy one feels when he can do good to others and help to relieve their suffering. It is generous to give help to those that need it," I responded. Ivanka was quiet for a moment, and then said, "During my infancy I experienced all the miseries of egotism and all the money problems, and was stained and tortured by the earth life. For this I knew that the best is to labor in favor of others. This I learned on Apu, and here on earth I suffered personally. I dedicated much time to determining which are the phenomena that make terrestrial life so difficult. I discovered that those are of two types, one created by man and the other by nature, but the most negative of all was the money, because it almost always is the beginning of the suffering. It is the creator of war, of egotism and of exploitation. This retards all that proceeds from it, the advancements, discoveries and investigations that man can develop to correct the fundamental natural phenomena that are so damaging to cellular life. Man also knows the damage that comes with money, but is dominated by his egotism and neglects to make a sincere attempt to extirpate or simplify the monetary system of terrestrial life. On the contrary, He pretends to justify the sacrifices, the suffering and the destruction and all the negativity that originates with money, attributing to money the destiny, the bad luck and the castigation prescribed by the omnipotent, for a work committed by who knows during the formation of society. The terrestrial life could be as good as that on Apu, or in any other galaxy in the universe, if the Earth people would organize themselves in a positive manner fraternally, without money, nor wars nor exploitation, forming one family, the terrestrial. The inhabitants of the Earth would suffer sacrifices, miseries and tortures caused by natural phenomena, until they eliminate their negative creations and give accounting completely, that the destiny of humanity they have in their own hands, and that only he must and can solve his own problems, based on union, peace, study, collective effort and a firm confidence in himself and his force. Only then will he have the time and force to correct the phenomena created by nature, such as illness, death, the negativity of the sun and others. Until now I know of 1,019,000 civilizations in this universe, but I have not seen any that could have subsisted without its own force positively planned. The evolution and advance of each one of those is exactly proportional to the union, the work and study that they practice. And what does it seem to you are the terrestrial gains up to now? I asked ironically. With the beginning of this century was begun the considerable development of terrestrial life, but it would not reach complete development until men united fraternally, which would have permitted the organization of your work, your study and your mode of life without the discrimination. Meanwhile the terrestrials continued interrupting their work, for two-thirds part of each day, resulting in them finding themselves with no occupation for almost half of the people able to work, and the major part of those who worked were assigned to wars. The human society agonized in misery. A firm dive anchor, showing worry on her face. Later she proceeded to narrate episodes of conflict to survive on Earth, for which they were abandoned by their parents before reaching 10 years of age. Quisp made a movement with his right hand upon a keypad. In the wall in front, a viewing screen illuminated, and it began to play the scenes according to what Ivanka had just described. I thought again of hypnotism or some form of suggestion so that people would see in the screen whatever they thought. Pedro came over to me smiling and said, "My friend, it is not what you are thinking. Those screens function by order of thought, it is true, but the scenes are real, just like they have happened. The positive ions do not lie. Once the screen has received an order to show any theme, it works independently of all thought. Your surprise and alternation are manifestations of your cells still not positivized. In order to familiarize yourself with it, it will take some time. Do you understand?" Ivanka said. "Order the screen to reproduce your life and it will see if there is anything of interest in it." I obeyed the visitor and thought of my birth. The scenes began to unfold, but in a strange dimension, as if the field, the people, the trees, and those animals had been reproduced, of normal size concerning their form, and showing the actions and themes up to the least detail. It seemed like I would be able to touch all that I could see. I saw my birth, my childhood and then my youth, in detail and with intimate scenes that nobody could possibly have filmed to show me. Also it showed many unknowns which had happened during the Second World War, and of which I was ignorant. I saw the destinies of my disappeared friends, the places and the scenes of how my companions died, death of soldiers and many other events that I did not know about before, as if they had just occurred. I began to meditate on what I saw, and by logical reasoning in those cases, came to the conclusion that each one could have happened just like what I saw in the screen. The economic solution and the development of human society, organizing uninterrupted work per shift, and what Ivanka just explained, would have assured, to my mode of thinking, a solution in grand part, of the actual problems of our society, such as the lack of work, the scarceness of necessities, and the lack of time for study. I don't know where her ideas came from, and suspected the origin of her intentions, but her concepts of how to accelerate the development of our society and combat its principal problems, seemed to me so simple and easy to realize that it surprised me. I considered them adaptable to each society. I thought that this would require little study to implement. Pedro and Aleph went out of the ship. Ivanka controlled the screen nearest us, and in it appeared the two Apuianos, standing a short distance from the door. Suddenly they rose up into the air, like the Apuiano who showed me how they fly individually during the previous encounter. They flew at the normal velocity of a small airplane and at some meters above the surface, zigzagging among the snowy peaks, and ascending and descending like birds. But the most impressive was the form, the precision and the dimension in which they executed their flights. For where they passed, all could be seen as if one were there, with them, present among the crags and things, enough to touch each one. The clarity of the colors was surprising. It gave the impression that all the things and places had been retouched with an enamel, very agreeable, and that we were observing them by means of some powerful optical apparatus. That apparatus graduates the colors according to the preference of the cells that make up the optical organ of the observer. Ivanka said, interrupting the observation of the scenes in the screen that her companions flew over. With it I looked towards Quisp and saw that he was watching in one of the other screens, Helen of Troy with all its actions, with a tranquility so profound as if he were watching a television program in his own house. I was surprised at the personality of the Greek princess, who with her beauty had provoked a bloody war between the Trojans and the Greeks thousands of years ago. I saw thus, the people of those times which our history only mentions dimly, compared to the reality. Their physique, their dress, their actions, and their form of living and their culture, were mostly forgotten by the writers of history. Nobody worried about them in those times, leaving out the real consistency of how they were. It entered my mind at that moment, that the actual men, historians, did not know the details of that civilization, and this inspired my curiosity to continue observing. Despite my not being sure whether what I saw was being suggested hypnotically, a dream provoked artificially, or a movie of reality, that strange dimension pleased me. All things, animals and people that I was seeing in the screen, I saw explicitly, and so agreeable as if I were really among them. Whatever of those things seen by my eyes, the fields, the people, the animals, etc., if I did not know the detail, from its figure came minuscule explanation of its origin, uses, duration and aspects of the positive and negative. I accepted then to continue watching those kings and principles of which much had been heard during my infancy and youth. Man ignores many things today, interrupted Ivanka, but all is not his fault. There have been such destructions in wars that he has struck out to the last trace many works, in such a manner that includes ignorance of our own origin. Look at that screen, she told me, indicating one that functioned to the right side of the other. I turned my head and saw Pedro and Aleph in a branch of the snow peaks of Jampara, posed on a wall made of gigantic blocks of stone more than 10 meters high and of similar width each. Mountains of ice rose above them as if they had been intended to hide forever the work of those first laborers that the earth had on its surface. What is that? I asked in surprise to Ivanka. Those are the remains of an Apuian city, constructed before the APU explosion, millions of years ago. Of what explosions do you speak? I asked in confusion for not having heard of such things before. I refer to the explosion of Apu, to when your sun and many galaxies were born. She told me and continued explaining about what had happened. Those ruins are huge. I asked in curiosity. Yes. They are the remains of a city that was the biggest of Apu at that time, but the explosions destroyed it, and its major part was dispersed in space, the rest was buried. All that remains on the surface is that wall that we see in the screen. Look there. Observe how it was when the people lived there. I looked at the screen and saw a city of wide streets, houses no more than 2 stories high, constructed of gigantic blocks of stone that in many cases only one composed the wall of a house. What is the name of that city? I asked Ivanka. Simi, in Apuiano. She responded with a rare accent. How do they move such enormous stones? Did they have special machines for hard work? I asked in surprise. No, my friend, the Apuianos had developed their faculties to a maximum, and one of those was their domination over gravity. To those stones they removed its specific weight and then transported them with no difficulty to the place desired. Also they could transport by means of disintegration and reintegration, but that system they used only in special cases. The degravitation was the more convenient. Observe, she suggested, and while I was looking at the screen, I saw mountains of stones degravitated and floating in the air from one place to another as though pushed by the wind. My companion, Quisp, informed me that the end of that day, the 10th of July 1960, was approaching. I looked at my watch and saw that it was 18:14. I remembered that my house was more than 10 kilometers away, and to walk it in the darkness of a night with a cloudy sky would confront us with many difficulties. I decided then to observe the view until I could see the complete history of that Apurian city, and depart for my return later. Finally, I called to Quisp to advise me of the time, and I saw that he had turned his entire attention to the viewing screen, looking this time at the conquest of Egypt by Alexander the Great. I felt bad about interrupting the occasion to observe famous episodes in the history of man, since he may never again have such an opportunity. I decided to wait some minutes more and continue conversing with Ivanka. With this, Pedro and Aleph came into the habitation, came over to us and said, "All for others." I did not hear well what they said and thought it treated of some key words used between them and Ivanka. I asked no questions. "It is our greeting, as you know," said Pedro in a soft tone. He sat on a cushion nearby and began to converse with Ivanka about the ruins of the city of Simi and the trip they had made over the snowfields of Champara. Meanwhile, it was getting dark outside. "Let's go," I said to Quisp in a low voice. "Let us wait a few minutes more, please. I want to see how ends the existence of Alexander the Great." I accepted, and then it began to rain. With the rain, our return would be much more complicated. I had to begin my work shift in the early hours of the morning, and was afraid I would not arrive in time. The interior of the ship remained illuminated by diurnal daylight, and one could not say if he was in the field under the sun of daylight, under the shade of a tree, under a tent, on a beach, or in the ship of those strangers. Quisp finished viewing the last of the life of Alexander the Great. He stood up to go, and I followed. Outside it was now raining by buckets. It would be very difficult to walk in this darkness, under the rain, over the abrupt folds of the mountains of Champara, not having more road than a path made by the steps of the sheep and goats. Quisp was desperate and began to suggest to me that we remain in the ship of those strangers until the following day. I could not accept that suggestion because my work was complicated and we had nobody in reserve. When we went out of the ship, Pedro came up to me and said, "If you will accept it, I offer my help to accompany you to Hualanka." This surprised me. I thought that those strangers were trying to amuse themselves with us. Some campesinos were near the ship gazing at the mysterious illumination radiated by it. I could not risk anything of my responsibility at work and accepted the offer of Pedro. This one then pressed one of those buttons on his suit. Immediately at 1 meter to the side of his head, an arc formed itself, like a horseshoe or umbrella that illuminated dozens of meters with the light of day. We took our leave of Aleph and Ivanka and departed. The downfall continued with all its force, but none of the drops of rain fell on either of us. This surprised me exceedingly. I asked Quisp if any raindrops were falling on him, to assure myself of this miracle. "No, senor, the rain is respecting me," he answered ironically. "Calm yourself, my friend," suggested Pedro, who walked between Quisp and I to illuminate the way with perfection. "We are protected by a cap of positive ions, a favor intended to calm your cells," he said. "Obey it and proceed." During the walk I did not talk to either of my companions. The rareness that I was experiencing produced in me an inexplicable sensation that I did not know how to calm. It was impossible for me to convince myself that inhabitants of another world, if they were, had come to visit the earth, to reside in the desolate mountains of the Peruvian Andes, as if that place was a center from where to observe the universe. Then I questioned what nation on earth had developed their technological advances in such manner that people could fly individually, have knowledge of marvels such as the use of the smallest existing particle of matter, to disintegrate and reintegrate matter, put off and recover their specific weight, and the attraction of things, to walk under a downpour of rain without getting wet, generate a halo of diurnal light around their body, have screens of time in which to see the past, present and future. These and other unknowns bombarded my mind, originating in me worries. For some moments I did not think anything. Later I suggested and reflected that, despite all, those foreigners must be spies of some terrestrial nation. But why and what were they looking for among those shepherds in the Ancash Mountains? Pedro and Quisp conversed continually. By their conversation I understood that the visitors had been seen at earlier times, and that Quisp knew of them because he and Pedro mentioned various events that had happened in the human society during our time, and also some that would happen in our future. In the incomprehensible light of the halo from Pedro's arc we could walk as rapidly as if it were day. When we got near the city of Hualinca, I noticed that Pedro had changed his clothes without stopping for an instant. In place of his characteristic vestment, now he was dressed in garments of campesino make and rubber boots, like the shepherds of that place. "How did you change your clothes without stopping?" I asked. "I disintegrated my bodysuit and reintegrated it in the form of dress of the campesinos," he responded naturally. "Why did you do that?" "To confuse my presence with that of the locals and not draw attention with my dress. Who is going to see us at this hour of night in rain, when all are necessarily in their houses? All but those that are sitting there," he said, indicating with his hand. I looked and it was true. A campesino who carried various things purchased in the city was resting some hundreds of meters from his hut. I believe it would have been easier to convert the campesino to dust and get him out of our way than to change your clothes, I opined, saying this to Pedro. He was surprised, and stopped suddenly, as if something terrible had happened. "You must not think this, my friend, for the Apuianos, the least are always in the first order, and I am referring to people, plants and animals. Never try to force in any manner the free cells to our interest, which we do only when it is positive for the next. It is innate behavior for all Apunians to sacrifice themselves always for others," underlined. We passed the Kitaraxa River, and when we got near the armory Pedro stopped. "My friends, all for others, we are almost in the city and I must return." He extended his hand, and then the same to Quisp, and then disappeared in an instant. "He disintegrated," offered Quisp. "I don't know. Sincerely, I do not know what was happening there. The only thing I can assure you is that we do not see him now, but we do not know if he is at our side or in some other place in the universe," I responded, and we moved on. Among the inexplicable things we had experienced during that day, what came to mind was the life of Helen of Troy projected in the time screen. Why did Quisp have to force that history, so remote? I thought. I stopped and said, "Tell me, Quisp, why were you so fascinated by the life of Helen of Troy on the screen? Because you have nothing more important to see?" "I was following the life of an Apunian who lived at that time on Earth. That was all," he responded tranquilly. When we passed over the bridge over the Rio Santa, in front of the tunnel entrance to the blockhouse, Quisp stopped and, looking at me, asked in a tone of admiration, "What do you think of those people?" "I'm going to tell you, Quisp, my true opinion. They say they are persons summarily good, and until they can apply a part of that to our actual mode of life we shall see, but I don't know whether what happened is real or some hypnotic trick. But after all, one thing disturbs me." "What is that, Senor?" interrupted Quisp, excited by curiosity. I worry about why they are here. Are they who they say they are? What is their intention? And what are they looking for here? They still have not convinced you that they are extraterrestrials, is that true?
No, sincerely still no.
Do you know, Senor, of any nation on Earth whose inhabitants have those powers, to realize just such extraordinary work as that presented to us today?
No, but neither am I sure that they do not exist.
Another thing, how do you know, Quisp, that we were not hypnotized, sleeping or something similar, and thus saw some magic tricks like in a circus?
Tell me, Senor, do you think those animals were hypnotized?
Nor do I know that. I have read nothing of hypnotism.
For me, sir, they are extraterrestrials. This is the seventh time that I have been with them. For this I am convinced completely, that on Earth there is nobody who can work such miracles or labors, as Ivanka said.
Do you know, Quisp, what I am thinking?
What, Senor? I have thought to advise the police of all this. What do you think?
He stopped suddenly, took me by the shoulders, and in a threatening voice almost shouted.
You are not going to do that, Senor.
Calm down, Quisp, please. What I mentioned was only a thought, not serious. I said to calm his animated aggressiveness, but to me occurred the idea of really doing that.
In any case, Senor, how can you think that of those people that we have come to know so well?
Did you not see just today how they saved the life of that boy?
Also, this is not the only time they have done such. They have done this many times with other persons.
Also, they have allowed us to see things of other worlds, how we were before, our past. They show us good pastures, they make rain when it is necessary, and many other things.
Calm down, my friend. I was only joking.
You already know that I am not capable of causing harm to those that aid the others.
Pardon me, Senor, but I was surprised by your opinion. I thought you were talking seriously and it bothered me.
Be assured that I like them and respect them the same as you. I have taken into account that those persons are very good and love all about them. This is what is of value. But I still have doubts about their true intentions.
What do they want here?
Thanks, Senor, responded Quisp happily. Don't forget, as the Apunians say. He agreed and proceeded walking.
Don't worry, Quisp. Please do not talk of this to anybody, I replied to calm him completely.
Eh, Senor? What disconfidence is that? How could you think such a thing? Despite those Apunians wanting us to speak of them and communicate their powers to others so that all can develop our minds and accept one another as brothers, I have not said a word to anybody.
No, I don't say anything, ever.
We said goodbye. I entered the house and my wife had gone on a trip to Lima, to see her daughter who was studying there, and having nobody with which to talk, I began to meditate on the affair. After having carefully analyzed, point by point, what I had experienced during my three encounters with those rare visitors, that in total came to about 20 hours, and to avoid being an accomplice to some supposed offense, I came to the conclusion that the authorities of that place must have knowledge of this. I decided thus to advise the local police of those supposed extraterrestrials. I went to the commissariat that in those times functioned in the city of Hallenka, some 50 meters from my house. A sergeant received me. How can we serve you, Senor? He asked courteously.
Thanks for your friendliness, Sergeant.
Please, are you in charge of this office, or is there another chief?
I am the chief for now.
What is happening?
Can we talk for some minutes on a very special business?
Yes, why not come in, Senor? He said, opening the door to a private office. I went in and sat down and began to tell him of those cases. From the beginning, the sergeant began to show surprise, but as I proceeded in my progress in my story, his disturbance increased. I began to become afraid. But when I began to narrate what I had seen that day, he stood up as if frightened, and in a soft voice dissimulating his change, he said to me, My friend, what marvels you are telling me. You have achieved a real triumph of world intelligence, announcing that these strangers are among us. Would you possibly try to explain, now, how I shall advise the superior command to move all the airplanes, troops, cannons and tanks of a division of many arms, with bottles of good Peruvian pisco. It would be a veritable feat to capture those extraterrestrials, and the whole victory we could attribute to your valuable information. But please, do not tell anybody about this. Go to your house, rest yourself, and tomorrow we will come and ask you to guide our army to the place where those extraterrestrials are. I understood that the sergeant considered me loco or drunk, and that in some was a joke. I did not go into more detail with him, nor did I continue to tell him all the details of that day, and to convince him that I would be considered intelligent, I said, "Thank you, sergeant, now I can surely rest and speak to nobody. Tomorrow you can find me to guide the army. Viva victory!" I shouted. Two guards, surprised by my exclamation, came out of the adjoining room. "He is drunk to the full. Let him go," ordered the sergeant as I left the commissariat. Despite my having suffered my first disappointment with the authorities, I was more motivated to guard in secret those experiences for 15 years. I was not surprised at the reaction of the authorities, because perhaps I would have acted worse some months ago. I looked at my watch and saw that it lacked 15 minutes of 2400 hours, and I had to begin my shift at work early, for which I hurried to rest. Saturday the 4th of June 1960. The mornings in the lane of Whalers, where I lived, has some very singular and attractive manifestations that are different from any other place. The great volume of the Rio Santa in its run to the Pacific, has dug its channel so deep as to try to bathe with its cold waters the warm heart of the earth itself. With this impudent restlessness the Santa has cut its way through hills and around peaks, separating this part of the Western Cordillera and its ramparts, one covered by perpetual snows, the other with meadows and prairies, and it in the middle of both, proud to be the offspring of the Andes, flowing to the Pacific and flirting with its two majestic admirers which have accompanied it since birth. That morning, the first Saturday of the month of June, the region was as attractive as ever. The sun with its rays illuminated the snowfields of the Cordillera Blanca, White Range, with its reflections upon the banks of the Rio Santa, where it harmonized its brilliance with the colors of the flowered fields. During the 3 weeks before, I had made various excursions into the mountains without encountering those strangers. I thought that they had changed their route, and this pleased me for many reasons. But this excursion began with the first break of day, and when the sun came up I was climbing heights in the direction of the Mawaguchi snowfield on the peaks between the Rios Cedros and Kitaraxa. That day nobody accompanied me, for which I decided to visit the places most broken up, because when accompanied the selection of those places to visit depended on the joint determination of both parties, which usually was contrary to my choice. It was about 10 o'clock in the morning when I reached the top of the rise in front of Whalers, above Duck Canyon. I had been walking since 5 o'clock and decided to rest, to observe with binoculars, the highest peaks of the surroundings. Suddenly I discovered in the distance of more or less 1,000 meters, an apparatus of those visitors, of a like model and color as that which I had seen some 4 weeks ago, when I met Ivanka. Sincerely I did not like this. But I was already in the place, so I decided to approach out of curiosity. After having rested some minutes I headed toward the ship. When I got to within some hundreds of meters of it I was surprised to see that through a crag in the rocks, a short distance from the ship, I could see a group of people. This worried me a little because I did not know the Quechua language and was without a companion to interpret. I worried about understanding the residents, but with those strangers I would have no problems since they spoke all languages with perfection. Despite my worries I then proceeded. Dozens of meters before the place a stranger met and received me. I had not seen him before, and that surprised me a little, and I tried to talk to him while we walked, so as to diminish my worry. "Don't be alarmed, my friend," the stranger said.
We will not bother you, but we are glad, because we are only investigating with sincere commitment, to obtain the truth and a positive result. In the confusion I did not take notice of his declaration, nor did I understand that the stranger with his counsel was referring to the denunciation that I had made to the commissariat some days before. Then we were in front of the ship, and when the door opened out came Ivanka. Despite my not liking the visitors, when I saw Ivanka I felt a little more calmed. Perhaps because I had spoken with her some hours in the previous encounter. She received me smiling and indicated that my visit pleased her. "This is our friend Zen," she said, presenting me to the stranger that had met me. "Is he also at Union?" I asked in sincerity. "Yes, my friend, of course. To the Earth very few times come other extraterrestrial people who are not from Apu. For other civilizations the Earth is not so interesting, but it is for us because it is a part of Apu and the terrestrials are our brothers." The words of Ivanka sounded like friendly joke and made me smile. "Shall we go into the ship or shall we sit out here?" she asked. "As you like," I answered. "Let us go inside then. I believe it is more positive there. We can observe on the screens if anything is of interest." We went inside. The interior was identical to that of the ship seen before. I sat in a big chair, she sat in another one in front of me. "I don't believe that we will be molested by your frank denunciation of the other night. Your action is absolutely normal," Ivanka said with a happy expression. This surprised me. I remained paralyzed. I felt fear and much embarrassment. What devils had advised them of my intention? How did they know? This was for me incomprehensible. Perhaps the sergeant is their accomplice, I thought. I was speechless. I couldn't answer anything. She understood my change and laughed in an outburst of amusement. "Listen, my friend," she said, "man. To get to the truth, progress, and knowledge, must work, study and practice. You have only tried to comply with the rules established by your society. If they had not been made, you would not have tried to comply with your own social rule, nor to discover our origin. The sincere effort to know the unknown, clear up the confusion, see the invisible and realize the imaginable, is the only road to knowledge. The evolution and progress of all civilization is the result of a constant search of the unknown," underlined Ivanka, making an amiable gesture to me. "Who has contacted you that I try to denounce you? Please, leave off your thoughts on this. I have already explained our opinion in this case. Forget it. Who cares?" "Very well, I will forget, but did you say the confusion was positive? Why do you not want to clarify what I am asking? If you must know, look at that screen. It is going to show all," indicated Ivanka smiling. "In that screen I saw Quisp and I parting from Pedro, just like it happened that night when the stranger accompanied us, illuminating the path with his halo of diurnal light. Then followed all the events of my parting with Quisp, my entrance into my house, the meditation and analysis of the reasons that resulted in my denunciation, my conversation with the sergeant and all the jokes that were made by the two guards upon my declaration, after which I had left the commissariat. To disappear from that place had been the only way to acquit myself of my shame. I felt such embarrassment at having been accepted after that, that I would have thrown myself into any abyss to avoid looking at the face of Ivanka. She noticed my distress, came over to my side, and affectionately said, 'My friend, why are you punishing yourself so? You must understand that you have done nothing bad.' In that moment I began to feel a recuperation of my animated state. Soon I came to see the advantage of my discussing with her the theme as if nothing of harm had been done. 'I am okay, senorita,' I said decidedly. 'I had intended to denounce you because I did not know who you really were nor what you wanted in that place. I denounced you the time, but nobody believed me, and it only provoked jokes by the people, because nobody there believed me.'" Ivanka released a laugh. After laughing a moment, she looked at me and spoke to me comprehensively. "My friend, you could shout to the whole world and speak of our presence, but nobody would believe you now, and perhaps not for a very long time. But that is of no interest now. Nobody should accept our existence by persuasion. Please, never try to convince any person to believe that we exist or that we visit the Earth or any other planet. I will not try that again," I answered sincerely, because I remember the ironic sharpness with which the sergeant reacted to my denunciation. There was a moment of silence. Ivanka paged a book of verse written by a Peruvian poet. Zen observed the central figure in the Gate of the Sun at Tiwanaku, sculptured in miniature by some artisan of that place, copied faithfully from the enormous original sculpture placed at the entrance to the Grand Central that, they suppose, was for some ceremonial ritual. I was surprised to see those objects in his hands because, before the interruption of the conversation, I had not seen anything of the sort around him. Zen possibly understood my thought and put it under his chair, where he pulled out a drawer of material similar to velvet, the same which was full of miniature works of the South American continent made at different times. I wondered what else my chair could have in its double bottom, and it occurred to me to ask. Suddenly, from below, in the bottom of my seat came a drawer, and in continuation another from the seat of Ivanka. The drawer in my seat contained leaves of trees, chips of wood and petals of flowers, but that of Ivanka contained books, magazines and samples of textured fabric. It showed me that every chair was like a storage center composed of various boxes of different sizes. Ivanka, understanding my curiosity, was complacent and smiled. She wanted to tell me something, but Zen spoke first. "All our furniture and ships have double bottoms and walls to have space for disposition. Also, the double walls are necessary to protect us from space phenomena. Why are you carrying all of this when you can obtain and transport it by means of disintegration?" I asked in a lightly joking manner. "There are many reasons for which we carry what you have seen. It is true that we can disintegrate and reintegrate matter to its smallest particle. Also, we have come to attain immortality, almost a null time, travel in the highest velocities, and many other powers to correct the nature or negativity of things. But this is not all. Every instant of time is different in its form, duration and event. This is a law of nature with which it is related to days, years, work, the necessity of things, and the means to correct the negative and obtain the positive. What yesterday was, today is not, and tomorrow will be distinct or does not exist for us now. Nothing is identical, and all has differences and transformations in every instant. Meanwhile, the movement is a principal factor of existence." I felt bored by such philosophy asserted by the stranger, of which I understood almost nothing, for which I decided to ask something different to change the theme. "Tell me, Zen," I interrupted, "what is the cause that is motivating your visit to Earth?" Ivanka smiled. I don't know if her smile was inspired by some phrase in the book that she paged, or from my question, but to me it did not matter. Zen showed an expression of joy and, looking at me, answered, "In the App Union it is congenital to protect the cells by whatever aid to the beings of the universe, which is the essential cause of our visit. We could not exist without fulfilling this precept. We are visiting many places and we aid all that we find during the trip. The different frequency of our visits to certain places of the Earth is related to the greater or lesser amount of works that there are there to be done in each place, works for App Unions. These works date from anterior epochs and after the explosion of Apu. It is certain that, as you say, we are able to see all that we desire in the screens of time, but when we are here, it is positive to make contact with our old works. Observe on the screen," Ivanka said. I turned my head and saw in the screen in front of me, an immense multitude of people in movement. Then there appeared some machines like globes, others flying plates, and others like airplanes of very small size. All were flying a few meters above the surface, dispensing from their interior a flow, like a vapor, but with a force sufficient to make obstacles disappear, such as rocks, boulders and shrubs, leaving the ground smooth and clean. Thus they obtained an immense field of hundreds of square kilometers cleaned off as if in a state ready for construction. Then enormous stones worked to perfection and intelligently guided, fell like blocks of snow in those respective places of construction, according to the plans of the architects. And thus they constructed buildings and streets. I was surprised to see what enormous stones with a size similar to the walls of some houses of two stories, fell as slowly as if they were made of paper, and one person could guide several with only one hand or with simple gust of air. I thought again of hypnotic suggestion and closed my eyes so as not to continue seeing lies invented by who knows whom. Moments later a hand touched my right shoulder. I opened my eyes and saw Ivanka was observing me with attention. My friend, continue believing what your mind imagines. But I must tell you that that is what you are really seeing. The stones that fall upon that pamper are degravitated and only have the weight necessary to prevent them from disappearing into space during the transport work. That is one of the methods employed by the Apunians in construction. We will accelerate the exposition in the screen only so that you can see the city constructed, and also its destruction. Watch the screen, please. She asked me courteously. I looked in the screen to comply with her request, and saw an immense city constructed according to a rare architecture, in which I saw no right angles any place. Its design resembled a butterfly, and the forests that could be seen on its outskirts adorned its enchantment, making a surprising city. What did they call, or do they call this city? I asked Ivanka. When they finished its construction they gave it the name Kutsak, because that was the name of the Apunian who directed the labor, a word that over the transcourse of time was changed to Kuzco or Kuzco, the actual name of the city today. That was one of the three most important cities and centers of disembarkation that were made by the Apunians during their second population of the earth. In that city, Kutsak, the Apunians established the first actual terrestrial chemical industry, and was one of the best of near space until the deluge flooded and destroyed it. Did you say deluge? I asked. Yes, my friend, responded Zen. The egoism and ambitions originated the cataclysmic storms, so disastrous that they broke the equilibrium of the planet. Thus the equatorial line then occupied the place of a meridian and vice versa. As a consequence it destroyed the major constructions that the Earth had then, from which it was separated from Apu. Look at the screen. He suggested and I obeyed. I looked at that apparatus and saw that a tremendous and incredible atmospheric catastrophe shook the terrestrial planet, and it was enveloped by roiling clouds. Strange and indescriptive hurricanes, thunderclaps and cyclones of winds pushed the Earth as though it were a leaf, and when it ended, that turbulent destruction, the surface of the earth was depopulated of plants, animals and humans. The poles had been converted to an equatorial position and that to a meridian line. The place where before had been an immense pampa with the impressive city of Kutsak, had been converted to crags and ravines of profound depths, covered with gigantic dispersed stones, coming from that fantastic construction that had been the pride of earth. Only in three places can one see the considerable amount of ruins for which the observer can give account in that region where had existed an indescribable construction. What a most frightening account! I then exclaimed spontaneously, and it made me think on that without knowing that it pertained to me. To believe or not to believe what I saw in that incomprehensible apparatus was my only problem in this moment. Yes, my friend, it was surprising and very negative. That event originated an irreparable retrogression in the advance of man, and a problem for us. It has been the cause also, of various phenomena that emerged and subsists even to today. The cause of that catastrophe destabilized a part of space, for which motive our flying cities have had difficulty for hundreds of thousands of years, in their voyages in the Milky Way. Space is summarily complicated, full of mysteries and unknowns, and the unknowns abound at every step.
These difficulties affect our visits to this galaxy, but like in the present decades, the Milky Way is displacing itself to some very positive zones of space, offering opportunities to visit all of its planets and systems, to which also is due our frequent visits and longer stays on the terrestrial surface. It is not always so easy to approach to each galaxy. Underlined Zen. What happened to the other cities that were constructed in the second population? Equal fortune was suffered by all. Of some remained parts not totally destroyed or not totally buried under all, of others nothing. But all were reached by the tempest. We knew that our visit would surprise the terrestrials as would be natural. The inhabitants of other planets also were surprised when they came into contact with us. Some saw us with tranquility, but the majority were frightened. Very few have understood that we are simple travelers, and that we are investigating the difficulties of space life, to inform us completely on what supports the beings of the populated planets. I was left with nothing to say. It is difficult to relax, to organize one's thoughts when at each glance one sees something unusual, surprising and incredibly rare. Every word of those strangers brought a surprising notice that alarmed me, and meanwhile I tried to recuperate the serenity with which I entered the ship of those companions of Ivanka whom I had not seen before. She stopped and presented them to me. "This is Armin and that one is Dus," she said for effect. Dus extended his hand, and I did the same. The same was done with Armin. The two then sat down and began to tell me what they had been experiencing during the trip they flew on. Suddenly Dus extracted from his pocket a small cap made of the skin of a rabbit. I was surprised to see that article, and it made me wonder how he had obtained it and why he was interested in having it. Ivankan understood my thought and looking attentively said, "The beauty of terrestrial life is distorted by its own inhabitants. Man, for being an intelligent and perfected entity, very little does he worry about facilitating life by using his knowledge to create and discover things without having to sacrifice other beings. On the contrary, he believes he has the right to exploit and use for his own benefit all the beings that live here, including his similars. He raises the animals with care, as if they were sincere friends, then he submits them to sufferings. From them he uses their forces for work, his cunning for diversion. Their sufferings for some produces pleasure, and later he kills them to eat their flesh, and even prepares from their skin capricious gifts, without thinking that all those beings have an equal right to live, and that each one is sensible to pain, to maltreatment or to love. In the Apunian society," she continued, "it is different. There all those living beings are the owners of their existence until they terminate their cycle of life according to the laws of nature. For the Apunians the life of those other beings takes first place, and second that of themselves. The plants, the animals and the humans are a product of the same mother and all have an equal right to live out their cycle without suffering originated by others." "Then what do Apunians eat?" I asked in a jocular way, despite having witnessed on the screens the foods and alimentation of their society. "The Apunian alimentation is made up of concentrated compounds in their major part of minerals, seeds and fruits and vegetation," responded Armin. "I showed you the last time, in the screen, the dining facilities and the rules to which I was submitted when I ate for the first time on Apu," interrupted Ivanka, reminding me of the scenes of their life, described previously. "The most negative aspect that the terrestrial inhabitants practice, is to take the life of another being for alimentation or other things. Alimentations of this kind, together with the harsh solar rays, is one cause of the peculiar aggressiveness, the egotism, and an enormous share of cellular destabilization of structures of your organism. For what does that cap serve? Perhaps it is not sufficient what you know about us?" asked Dus. "In reality, my friend, for us there are no secrets in any part of the universe, but we are accustomed to possess these objects made by means of an activity so negative, because they serve to show to the inhabitants of other planets which we help to overcome the negative. There are those who have forms of life similar to that of the terrestrials, but we are trying with all commitment to form among those groups positives of persons whose cells contain less negative composition in their atoms, for which little by little they become more positive to the others," said Tuss. "This also serves for the same objective," interrupted Armin, showing me a couple of bullets for a rifle. "Where did you get those?" I asked. "In the surroundings of the city of Pura, where the soldiers carried out maneuvers during the last week," he responded. "You have returned to Apu since we saw you that last time?" I asked Ivanka, to change the theme.
Yes, I came back only yesterday, but they have come to Earth for the first time.
We came together. Do you like the terrestrial life? What do you say? Is it getting better or continuing the same?" I asked.
"The fundamental, my friend, for the life of beings here on the Earth, and in any other part of the universe, is the union, the work, the study and the peace. Without those factors, there is only sacrifices but not life. To obtain this essence that nourishes life, the terrestrials must replace money, the aggression for it, and the egotism, with other factors. To eliminate money," I thought, releasing an outburst of laughter. They smiled also. I felt that their smiles were inspired by my incomprehension, ego and jocularism, which did not please me. I remembered the mockery of the sergeant and his intent to overlook me. "Pardon me. It is just that my form of thinking is different and, according to you all, I have a right to express my opinion." "We do not forget, my friend," answered the three almost together. Ivanka smiled and then looking at me said, "You are progressing. Only the sincere try to correct themselves by recognizing their errors." There was a small silence. I looked at my watch. It was nearly 1800 hours. I stood up with the intention of taking my leave of those strangers, to be able to get back to Hualinka before dark. The three Apuianos and Ivanka accompanied me to the door of the ship and I went outside. The sun descended behind the mountain, leaving the snowy peaks until the following day. Several shepherds could be seen in groups at some hundreds of meters distance, as if they waited for me to come out. I said goodbye to them also, and taking a path which was, according to my opinion, the shortest possible, I headed out. As I did so, one of the campesinos followed me and reaching me, said, "My friend, if you are going to Hualinka, we can go together because I also am going there." "Very well, my friend, let us go," I responded, since I felt fatigue and felt a desire to talk to a legitimate terrestrial. "Then let us go there, because that path that you have selected is much longer. To go to the right will make it too long. Let us go where you like. But, please, hurry. I have haste. What do you think of those visitors?" "They talked a long time."
"Yes. Too long," he responded courteously. "They are good people. They know many things and are quite sensitive," I said with the accent of that place.
"What is your name?" I asked Manuel. He responded. "Do you know, Manuel, I have wondered why, and from where come these good people, to this place so rugged and alone.
For what reason?
Do you know of what nationality they are?" I asked to sound out his opinion.
"How?
They have not said that they are extraterrestrials?"
"Yes, but to whom do they pretend to engage with this story?"
"It is no story, senor. They say to the whole world that they are extraterrestrials, who come from the planet Apu, located outside of our constellation. They are very good people and can make whatever they desire to happen." I understood that Manuel thought like his other neighbors, and to see me frustrated in my intent to obtain true information, verified, according to my opinion, about the identity of those visitors. I stopped talking. We spoke of nothing more until we parted in the city of Hualinka. As was my custom, with nobody I could talk to about those rarities, I incorporated them into my shift at work, which that day began at 20 hundred hours. Despite the surprises, jokes, doubts and very little in what I was experiencing, my desire to continue searching to discover who those foreigners were was faithful to my decision taken from the beginning. Based on those declarations of the shepherds, of the campesinos, and of the workers who at times accompanied me, the only thing that I could assure myself of was that at times when I was accompanied, the only thing I could be assured of, was the presence of those strangers for real. But whether they were terrestrials or extraterrestrials and what was the reason for their visit, remained to be ascertained. But despite all, I began to meditate on the comportment of those foreigners in relation to my denunciation against them. If those beings had been inhabitants of Earth, whatever was the motive for their visit, they would certainly have been offended by my accusations against them to the police, for which they would make an investigation. This would irritate any terrestrial. But they felt indifferent to my efforts. On the contrary, my denouncement had provoked such amusement as if in its place I had brought a bouquet of flowers. In their opinion, I had only tried to discover the truth about them, and this caused admiration. I came to the conclusion that no Earth person would have reacted in such a manner, that it ended in tranquility and acceptance of my threatening actions, which could only be accepted by very positive beings, of extraordinary powers to know the very thoughts of others, and with an elevated concept of love, work and study. For the first time I took seriously the possibility that those visitors could really be inhabitants of a distant planet in which there was no egotism, fear, aggressivity, nor malintent, and I felt repentant for those actions that I had taken against them up to this moment. Megalithic ruins from past Apunian constructions. The remains of the ancient Apunian city of Cuzac was later known as Kozj and finally Cuzco or Cusco as it is called today. What is known today as the Great Inca Fortress at Sacsayhuaman typifies the style and old method of construction of those ancient buildings by the Apunianos when they were here. Wherever these fitted blocks of stone are found, they represent some work of the ancient Apuianos when they were here. The remnants of the temple city of Makupiku, then and still, is constructed on the top of a steep mountain, and made up of the famous fitted stones, that even the most modern equipment in the world today would find difficult to erect into place up there on that peak, is another example of the old Apunian architecture and construction. The following color photograph shows the famous stones of Sacsayhuaman as they are seen today. In no place in Inca history is the foundation and construction of this great fortress fully accounted for. It seems that they have always been there. Do the Apunians have the answer? The second color photograph shows the remains of the sacred city of Makupiku, also constructed of the same kind of fitted stones of immense weight high up a steep narrow path on the side of a mountain. A seemingly impossible feat to accomplish even today.